Well, thanks, Roger. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan, and as crowded as this studio's ever been, I have with me four incredibly talented people, two of whom are my, one is one of my oldest friends, another is
oldest in both.
Less old, in many ways, Gary. That's the voice of Gary Houston, who actually used to work for my dad. I met Gary as a newspaper man before I knew he was an actor and director and a theater person. Sitting next to him is Michael Mitchell, and next to him is Aaron Sloan, both actors. Next to me is Peter Guarino, who is the, is it head? You want to be called the head of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago?
That's absolutely
what are you,
fine. Yeah.
Peter's been on a number of times because I'm a huge fan of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. I'm flabbergasted that it's 24 seasons you're moving into.
Yeah. And with the support of you, Rick.
That's what's done it. Yeah.
They were
fledgling. Describe what it is for those people who do not have the recordings of our previous encounters.
Well, the Shakespeare Project was founded in 1995 by a group of us, Gary being one of the fellow actors at the very beginning, and we got together and decided that we love Shakespeare so much that we simply wanted to get together and read his plays. So we got a place to sit around a table and read. And that was up at the Burger Park Mansion on Sheridan Road.
Started off in the Equity Office, and the Equity Office was on Wabash.
That's right.
Wow. But at the Burger Mansion, what happened is as you were starting to read Shakespeare and read the plays to one another and talk about it, people started to gather, strangers, actors.
Exactly. Well, it is a kind of an artist colony up there. There's people that do painting and music and fine art, but there are people who are inclined to like Shakespeare, and they would, you know, kind of congregate and say, "What are you doing in there?" And then finally the guy who ran the place said, "Would you be willing to come by on a Sunday afternoon, and we can set up some chairs, and you can read one of your plays and invite people from the neighborhood." So that's how we got started back in the mid-90s, and now we've established, we have now 8 theatrical reading venues around the Chicago area where we bring our plays with professional actors to do a stage reading of Shakespeare's plays, and they're provided to the public at no charge.
See, that is the most of the actors I've known, most of the newspaper people I've known, most of the painters I've known, struggle to make a buck.
Right.
And the fact that never, did it ever occur to you during the whole project, like after the first year, saying, well, maybe we could charge people for this? Did it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. But one of the things we really felt was that we wanted to provide something to maybe people like seniors and folks that couldn't afford, The important thing to remember, though, is that our actors are all, members of Actors Equity.
Professional.
So they get paid. They don't do this for free, but we are supported by our venues who provide some funding. And then we have a wonderful group of people who believe in our mission who donate money to the Shakespeare Project, and that makes up what we need to do.
I think that when Burger Park first started, I don't think they actually funded. I believe it was grants plus donations, and I'm beyond that. But, Rick, we made something like, if we did 3 readings or 2 readings, $60.
Yeah, I know.
And some people said, I don't know about you, but I think that I could use this money. So it's cigarette money.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And all actors should smoke. Let me ask you two, Michael Mitchell and Aaron Sloan, how did you first get involved with these characters?
I'm fairly new to the Shakespeare Project. I relocated, I moved from Virginia to Chicago about 2 years ago, but I was cast in my first Shakespeare Project production this January, which was a Jacobean tragedy called Women Were Women.
How did you hear about the project? I mean, it's not as if they're on the side of buses or something. I mean, it's a relative secret. I know. I'm working. It's only 24. I've been working on this for 24 years, Gary.
I am a proud member of Actors Equity, and we're lucky that Chicago is the regional office for Actors Equity, and they have a wonderful website with lots of audition postings.
Oh, okay.
And so I just hit the ground running when I moved here 2 years ago and went to every open call that I could go to, and one of my first auditions was for the Shakespeare Project.
Yeah, and I grew up in Chicago, but moved away to New York City. My wife and I came back in like 2000, and I got to know just from the community here a lot of these actors who also work with the Shakespeare Project, and it took several years, but at one point, after auditioning or something, Peter generously put me in one of the readings, and I've done several of them since. And it is such a joy because it's a concentrated, like, week and a half.
Yeah, see, then I think there's an intensity to the productions. It is indeed Shakespeare, so you've got that going for it. But there is an intensity to it, and you're reading off book. But it also, for each of you, and you two, is a kind of almost different kind of acting that I think might be a little more liberating and than a regular gig.
Well, I think one of the things that I see as a director is, because we don't have a lot of time, people have time to do prep, so they'll know maybe 2 months before we do the play that they're going to play a part. But once we get in, we have 17 hours of rehearsal, and people come in and they make choices for their characters, and I'll often say your first choice is always like your best choice.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes I think if you have too much rehearsal, you can overthink certain things about a character and kind of get in your head, whereas your first impulses about playing an action or doing something are usually right on. And everyone in the project is very supportive of each other and knows that that's sort of like one of the ground rules. That,
well, everybody I've met in this is a kind of, seems just on the surface, everybody, you guys included, to a very nurturing, collaborative kind of sort. And that's not always the image of actors.
Really?
Well,
you know, what you just said, Peter, reminds me of, not us, but a company that didn't exist about at least 30 years ago, probably more, maybe 40 years ago. I can't remember what they were called, but certainly Shakespeare was in the title of the company. And their concept was to pass around parts, cast the whole thing, we'll see you in a month, memorize your part, get on stage and
find a costume.
No direction, no blocking.
You're kidding.
They blocked themselves. And they did it, and I said, "Well, how do those work?" He said, "Surprisingly well. It always comes off, one way or the other. We get it done." You know,
the next production, and occasionally, it's not only Shakespeare. You have gone further afield, and not that you were bored with Shakespeare. I think that would probably be impossible, would it not?
No, absolutely not. When I took over as artistic director in 2010, one of the things I wanted to do was to open up for our audiences a little bit more about Shakespeare's contemporaries. So every season we do four plays. We do three plays by Shakespeare, and then we've done one by one of his contemporaries. Aaron mentioned the Thomas Middleton play we just did, Women Beware Women. And we also get a lot of programming requests from our kind of our Chicago home, which is the Newbery Library.
Yeah.
The Newbery always has wonderful exhibitions and symposia going on, and they'll come to us and they'll say, "Can you think of a piece of theater that we can do around
that would embellish our exhibition on Egypt or something?"
Exactly. Yeah. So they'll come to us and we will come up with something, and then frequently now what we found, especially with this current piece that we're doing, our other venues are very interested in that work as well. So then we were able to take that show out to our other libraries and venues and produce it out there as well.
We'll talk at length about that show. It's about revolutionary America, because revolutionary America is hot. And we'll also talk about Neil Simon. I'd really be eager to get your views on the, how old was he, 91? The recent passing of Neil Simon. First, I'll tell you this. Don't miss Chicago Tribune's first ever Night Market. Enjoy food, fun, and entertainment August 24th through the 26th. To learn more, visit ctfoodbowl.com/nightmarket. We'll be back momentarily.
Thank you.
That's not usually the kind of folk music I normally play on this show. Peter, what is that? That is part of this upcoming play that you at the Shakespeare Project of Chicago are going to perform, starring Gary Houston, Michael Mitchell, and Aaron Sloan, Jefferson and Adams.
Right. We're doing this play called Jefferson and Adams by Howard Ginsberg. And this came to us from the Newbery. The Newbery is doing a year-long program on Thomas Jefferson this year. So if you want to go to their website and check out the other events that they're doing. But they came to us and they said, could you do a piece of theater around Thomas Jefferson? And we found this play. Howard Ginsberg is the playwright. It's produced fairly regularly at Colonial Williamsburg. There was also a DVD of the film made. It traces this relationship between...
This remarkable relationship. I read the play. You were nice enough to send me the play. I think the play's great.
This incredible relationship between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, and it tells us an awful lot about our early history as a country through the lives of these two men, our second and our third presidents, and Abigail Adams playing a big part. Erin, though, who is playing Abigail for us, spent some time working at Colonial Williamsburg, so she knows an awful lot about the play, and maybe you want to talk a little bit about its history.
I'd love to hear that.
It was quite fortuitous that I found you all and you found me. So, yes, I worked for the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation for about 8 years.
Churning milk or what?
Contrary to popular belief, we do
I've
not
never
churn
been there.
Butter
been there.
At Colonial Williamsburg. No, I actually worked in their education outreach
department. Oh, how nice. How nice.
They have a very robust teacher professional development program, and I worked with that. And I also did some historical character interpretation. So among my friends, I can claim to know Thomas Jefferson, James Madison. James Madison just sent me a picture on Instagram tonight. and Patrick Henry, General Washington, the Marquis de Lafayette. But my very good friend, Bill Barker, who portrays Thomas Jefferson, the older Thomas Jefferson now at Colonial Williamsburg, because they have recently hired a younger version of Mr. Jefferson, but he was in Howard's play, along with another very good colleague of mine, Abigail Schumann, who portrayed Abigail Adams. And I had the great privilege to work with all of them in various capacities at the foundation and all kinds of historical programming.
Well, so you're like an insider, but when you, Michael and Gary, read the play, as I did this afternoon. I liked it tremendously, but I'm not an actor. What was your... Did you say to yourself, oh, man, I can't wait to do this, or...
Pretty much. I mean, it's thrilling because it is all their words.
Yeah, right, right.
And I grew up a huge devotee of Adams. So I already having read his and Abigail's letters when I was younger, this was just thrilling to me that somebody organized this into a theatrical work. I think it's great.
Gary, how about you?
Well, as you know, I have loved always playing historical figures.
Absolutely.
I mean, Nelson
Algren is no, yeah.
William Blake, George Pullman.
So, yeah.
So this would be, as far as the Americans are concerned, the best John Adams is somebody that you have to admire. I think he is always a little bit... Well, he's not on Mount Rushmore, is he?
Right.
Jefferson.
Right,
is.
Right,
and
right.
That's a source of great grievance to... No, not
to you.
To you. Cary Grant never fell down his nose or anything.
Right.
Did
you know anything about... Did any of you, you included, Peter, know the work of Mr. Ginsberg, of Howard Ginsberg? Did you know his... work at all?
I was not familiar with him before we approached him about doing the play, and found out that he's a very successful playwright. And
he's done a lot of historical kind of things.
A number of different genre too, which I think was interesting. He had a play, I believe, in the 70s that was produced in England with Alan Bates, so he's had some commercial success as well.
How did he react when you told him you wanted to do this? I'm sure that every playwright... Their first question might be, well, how much? And their second question, where?
No, he was absolutely delighted. I had a number of nice conversations with him. He lives in San Francisco.
Right.
We invited him out here, to see the show. I believe he's not able to travel.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he found out the Newbery was interested, he was also then saying, can you get some more performances? So we went to our other library venues, and we pitched it to them, and I'm happy to say that in addition to the Newbery, we're going to be doing the show at the Highland Park Public Library, the Niles Main District Library, the Elmhurst Public Library, the Vernon Area Public Library in Lincolnshire, and also at one of our newer venues, Plymouth Place Senior Living in LaGrange Park.
That's great. That's great. Are you guys must be excited about that, too, because the whole notion of this also for me is, wow, it's just like a one-shot thing. It's not a long run. And so there's a weird kind of excitement in doing that, but also of something empty, yes? And doing five shows is better than doing one.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's the audiences that the project has sort of amassed over the year in all of these,
places.
Some of them far-flung locations that come, that are hungry for this kind of material and always deeply involved. And the question and answer periods afterwards are just always.
Yeah.
They're very well read. So,
yeah. That makes this exciting.
I was very excited. The first time I heard these guys read the play aloud, I thought to myself, what unbelievable language. I mean, this is the prose of three people who had real astute command of the English language. And just to hear their thinking expressed in these dialogues and these letters that they had, it's something that I think we're somewhat lacking today in our
public discourse. Well, in a non-tweeting fashion, they're communicating with one another.
It was also pointed out to me that, of course, this is a function of technology. Someone pointed out to me this standard of expressing yourself very well on paper lasted at least a century after that because of lack of telephone.
Of
everything else that you were just discussing. People were still writing cursively letters to each other. It was an epistolary culture. The only possible difference was they could get these letters to each other a little faster than they could in the late 18th century.
Right, where the horses were taking them to people.
People wrote very well, not only the highborn or the statesman or everything, but common people wrote very well.
Well, even, you think of Jefferson as, obviously a savant and a grand intellectual, but with very little formal schooling. I mean, these guys were just really, really smart. And I also think that the whole, the Hamilton frenzy, justifiable kind of frenzy, is going to pack these shows, don't you think? I mean, you must have thought of that a bit. I mean, the interest in this period and then these justifiably larger than life guys, mostly, and women.
Thank you.
The elephant in the room, possibly this room, is what's going on right now. And I think there is a great public interest now in foundations of the country. And that means the founding fathers, and we are talking about, when we talk about Jefferson, Hamilton, Adams, and Madison, we are talking the people who wrote the Federalist Papers. People want to, the expression rule of law has been heard more on the radio and television.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, this past year than any time during my life.
Yep.
I actually wondered, what does such a simple but elusive phrase actually mean? Refers probably to John Adams, this is a nation of laws, not men. And we have to be reminded what that means. And I don't know if the Hamilton rage was already, how old is that show now, do you know?
I think probably it's about 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
Well, then it precedes the current situation. But
right.
I think that its popularity could only grow because of what I just discussed, the context of today.
See, and the wonderful thing is Howard Ginsberg has a dedication to the play in which he writes, no way he's quoting Daniel Webster in commemoration of the death of Adams and Jefferson, which unbelievably was on the same day, unbelievably on July 4th, 1826, which is the 50th anniversary of the original July 4th. He writes, no age will come in which the American Revolution will appear less than what it was, one of the greatest events in human history. No age will come in which it will cease to be seen and felt on every continent that a mighty step, a great advance, not only in American affairs, but in human affairs, was made on the July 4th of 1776. Then he writes, Daniel Webster, no two men now live, perhaps it may be doubted whether any men have ever lived, who have impressed more on mankind their own philosophies of politics and of the government. And you think now of politics and the government, and I shudder. I just shudder. We have to take a break. When we come back, Gary Houston, Michael Mitchell, and Erin. I'm sorry I mispronounced your name, Erin.
It's actually Aaron, so that's all right.
It is?
Yes.
Oh. Well, Gary, yeah, somebody, we all, Erin. We don't care. It's spelled Aaron, and I'm pronouncing it now Aaron. They're going to do a reading from the upcoming Jefferson and Adams, so please stay tuned. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan, and Peter Guarino, and Gary Houston, and Michael Mitchell, and Aaron Sloan. On September 15th at 10 a.m. at the Newberry Library, there will be a reading performance by the Shakespeare Project of Chicago of Jefferson and Adams.
In costume, by the way.
What?
In costume.
You don't do that. Wait.
You're in costume.
What kind of, what are you doing? You're ruining the Shakespeare Project of Chicago with it.
Colonial
in costume, but they're going to read too, right?
That's right. That's right.
They're going to read. And it is going to star the aforementioned Gary Houston as John Adams, Michael Mitchell as, Aaron Sloan as Abigail Adams, and Michael as Tom Jefferson. Ladies and gentlemen, here is a live sneak preview.
Dear Mr. Adams, after 3 long years, this interminable war is grinding down to a total stalemate, a weary war of attrition.
Philadelphia and New York have been occupied. Others may soon fall to the enemy.
We sleep fitfully, prepared to abandon all that we possess if British ships return to Boston Harbor, which we expect at any moment.
But when will General Washington move to the attack?
Our army, so feeble, ill-fed, ill-clothed, ill-paid, were it not for the discipline, the courage, and the character of the general, we would have no army at all. Our prospects are not encouraging, but where is France, Jefferson? Where is France?
There are reports King George has been declared insane.
And British casualties have begun to mount.
Their government is in the hands of regents.
The cost to England of this little war, this beastly unpleasantness in the colonies, is mounting high beyond all of their arrogant expectation. But France, as we now approach a critical crossroad, where is...
France has declared war on England. Paris, la belle France, venue sauver.
La belle France can never resist a chance to make mischief, France, especially against the English.
France and America together, we shall remake the world.
Revolutionary, democratic America and corrupt, monarchist France. A fine marriage.
Hold fast, dear spirit. Hold fast. This winter, Mrs. Jefferson and I suffered yet another loss of child.
In New England, we have been visited by a plague of virulent dysentery which swept away my dear brother.
And my beloved mother. Now, an epidemic of smallpox has come upon us. So sickly and so mortal a time, no man alive can e'er remember. The Lord doth test our mettle.
And find us wanting.
He doth frown upon our great enterprise.
Our people are becoming addicted to greed, sloth, and corruption. Even here, in Massachusetts.
A newborn. A sweet little girl.
My dear Mr. Jefferson. And Mrs. Jefferson.
With ne'er a chance to taste the gift of life. This was our fourth child. Lost. Oh, Patty. Patty.
The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away.
The Lord giveth nothing to Mrs. Jefferson, but he taketh well indeed. Her condition does not improve. It is with profound reluctance that I remain as governor of Virginia. I have never had ambition to govern over men. It is a painful and thankless office.
They've moved the mic toward me now, so I can say, wow, that was spectacular. Peter, you didn't have to do any directing of these people. That's what I liked.
No, 90% of my job is just finding the right people to put in these roles. So I was really thrilled to get Gary, Michael, and Aaron to do this. So what you heard was a little excerpt from Act 1 of the play.
There, it's a two-act play.
That's right. Running time for anyone interested in coming is about 2 hours, including a 10-minute intermission. And it really does cover, quite a bit of time in the great history of these people.
Even that small part was very, very emotional for me, mm-hmm. and obviously for all three of you, too. Those kind of, having read the play, there are emotional ups and downs, and that I'm not an actor. I don't know how one calibrates their own voice and their own mannerisms to make that work. Is it hard, or does it come? You're all pros, and is it difficult, Gary?
I was thinking that one of the things you were talking about was the galloping of history in this, yeah. and how quickly your transitions have to be affected without sounding strained
right.
against what you just heard, and that's what I think is the main challenge right here with this little piece. It does move fast,
yeah,
and that's the challenge of it. And if you can see the challenge that way, I think you're better for it.
I think the juxtaposition, too, between what these people were trying to do, which was to build a new country.
Right.
At the same time, going through these incredible personal challenges, mm-hmm. especially as we hear Jefferson losing four of his children and then later on his wife. These are incredibly heroic people to persevere through incredible social and political challenge and at the same time deal with these personal issues.
Well, and also to share what I get out of that and of the play, too, is there's incredible intimacy to this, to all of the relationships between the three people in the show.
They were all very intellectually and very personally close.
And they're hundreds of miles away from each other.
Yeah.
Hundreds of miles away. And they do, I think that is the way to do this. Whether they felt that way or not, I think it's in the words. I think they did feel intimately towards each other, even though they didn't see each other in the flesh for long periods of time.
Yeah, and they weren't looking at phones and doing this over Skype or something. They're very intense.
I think one of the things that's most incredible about the play is that you see these people with, especially Jefferson Adams, who had very different political views, who were deeply affectionate of each other and then basically had a falling out where they didn't see each other for, it was 11 years or something like that. But through Abigail's help and some other intermediaries, they began writing letters. And it was, again, that personal connection which helped bring them eventually back to some kind of reconciliation.
And I see in that little scene two points of conflict. One is the views towards Washington, General Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
Contrasting. Jefferson doesn't sound that negative about him, but actually there was. And Adams is very much a champion of Washington. The second one is France. I think it is to come in the play, in the history. But already we can see that Jefferson's a Francophile.
Oh, no question.
And Adams disapproves of very much of the whole lifestyle.
There are a lot of layers to this show. You can see it. It is free, of course, for the audience, but you have to, and I would suggest it, register. You can go to Newbery.org to do that. You can also go to Shakespeare Project Chicago to see everything that they're doing. We'll talk more about that. We're going to mention Neil Simon. Thank you, the three of you, very much. It was very, very moving. I got to tell you that CNN's Ryan Nobles joins Steve Cochran tomorrow at 7:40 with all the latest from D.C. God help us all. And now we'll be back in a couple minutes. ladies and gentlemen, is another piece of the music that you will hear when you attend one of the six performances of Jefferson and Adams presented by the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, starring Gary Houston, Michael Mitchell, and Aaron Sloan. It starts at the Newberry Library on the 15th of September and then moves to some of the other venues that Peter...
Right, we actually start on Wednesday the 13th in Highland Park.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and then we have Niles on the 14th, Newberry on the 15th. Elmhurst Public Library, which is one of our new venues this season, will be on Sunday, September 16th at 2. On Monday the 17th, we'll be in Lincolnshire at the Vernon Area Public Library at 6:30. And on Wednesday the 19th, we'll be at Plymouth Place Senior Living at 7:15.
You three actors, this is a tough schedule for you guys. It's different. It's not one venue. It's all over the place.
You end up at the senior center. It's going to take up so much time. I think we'll be old enough.
Move in.
Yeah.
Yes. Part of the deal is you all can have a room there.
Yeah.
I want to say something about Plymouth Place because it's really incredible what they're doing. So they are opening those performances to the public. You have to pre-register.
Yeah, sure.
But they really believe in, you know, bringing the community in and having that group experience, you know, with the residents. So we're really, really thrilled to be there.
That's great. And the other thing about the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, libraries want to host any nickel and dime writer out there who's got a book to promote. This is vastly different. This is not some stumble bum coming in to read two pages of his latest thriller. This is something, and you've seen it. I think all of you have seen it in the response from the crowd. You've got to have regulars there who are not just fans of Shakespeare, but fans of theater.
The project has a really regular and very passionate audience. That's one of the most thrilling things about doing the shows is the people who come and their level of participation and passion about the work.
And recognizing faces, individual faces. I've noticed that early on at the Burger Park experience. They would, which was, by the way, an annex to the mansion itself.
Right.
And I think
the coach
house. That's it.
House, yeah.
And I would see the same faces coming religiously because it was important to them.
Yeah.
And they were good listeners.
Yeah.
They liked listening to they wanted to listen. I think they like readings to regular shows. And when you're distracted by the trappings of a production, they wanted to just get the ear listening to the text being rendered by the actors.
Well, and the price is also so right for them because it is nothing.
That's right.
And there's no fiscal problem in doing that or waiting for tickets to a show. I'm just thinking, Peter Guarino, is as ambitious as anything you've done. Is it not? I mean, I'm just looking at this schedule.
Right. Well, we've done some, you know, we've done some different shows over the years. You know, you helped us a few years ago when we did our U.S. premiere of Tom Stoppard's Dark Side, incorporating The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. So we also, as I said, we have a lot of programming that comes out of the Newberry, and I'll just mention a couple of the other things that we're doing this season. So we're going to do another Christmas show this year. We are doing an adaptation of an Arthur Conan Doyle short story that I did based on The Adventure of the Blue Carbuncle, which is a Sherlock Holmes story that actually takes place during the Christmas season. It's one of his only stories that's actually set during the Christmas season. So we're going to be doing that on December the 15th at the Newberry. And then we have another show coming up in February, which is we're doing a play by Kenneth Sawyer Goodman, whose family was part of the
Goodman Theater
founders here in Chicago. We're doing a play of his called, a one-act play called Back of the Yards, which is a wonderful little one-act play set in the south side of Chicago in the early part of the 20th century, dealing with a murder and a mother, a priest, and a police sergeant. So a very different time when we were dealing with some of the same issues that we're having today.
You're also doing Moby Dick.
Yes,
are you guys all going to be in Moby Dick? Gary Houston, Michael Mitchell, and Aaron Sloan?
I don't believe it's cast yet. But
I'm overriding you. These three should be in it. Very exciting.
I know. Well, let me tell you a little bit about that. So March is the 200th anniversary of the birth of Herman Melville. And the Newberry is doing a big celebration of his life, including an end-to-end reading of the entire novel. over 24 hours.
I know. I think I'm part of that. I think they've asked me to do.
But anyway, we're going to, in March, going to be doing a play called Moby Dick Rehearsed by Orson Welles.
That I have never heard of. Had you heard of it? Have you?
Yeah.
You'd heard of it?
He did something.
Some legendary.
That. And I knew he played Ahab and directed it, but I didn't know it was called Moby Dick Rehearsed.
Moby Dick Rehearsed. And the really cool thing about this play is that it is about a Shakespeare theater company that is actually producing King Lear at the beginning of the play. And in walks the producer, the impresario character, which was Wells, and says, wait a minute, we're not going to do King Lear anymore. And he starts handing out the sides, the parts for Moby Dick.
Wow.
So they turn on a dime like that, and they present this incredibly theatrical, actor-oriented production of the play. And it's really going to be very exciting. David Skidmore is going to direct it for us. And that's going to be at the Newbury on March the 16th. And we'll also do a performance in Niles on March the 15th.
It sounds exciting. You can get all sorts of information and donate to Shakespeare Project Chicago at ShakespeareProjectChicago. Is it .org or .com?
.org.
And just see what they're doing and all the Shakespeare play. You know, you're not abandoning Shakespeare.
No.
You've got Pericles and Titus Andronicus, A Midsummer Night's Dream coming up. And if you heard Gary and Michael and Aaron just read from Jefferson and Adams, that is, it doesn't cost any money, but it's a hotter ticket to my mind than Hamilton.
Well, bless
you. I'm serious. I only heard a bit of it, but I've read the whole play. And Moby Dick, it reminds me of that great Harold Ross, the famous editor of The New Yorker, screaming at one of his writers, Moby Dick, was it the man or the whale? The man or the fish, maybe. What about Neil Simon? I've seen his shows. I don't know if you've been in his shows. He's certainly someone who defined theatrical comedy in the last half of the 20th century.
I think he was so ubiquitous. I think people took his presence for granted. He was like the air we breathe, but he was so brilliant at what he did. He didn't write jokes. He just happened to write characters who speak in jokes.
Yeah.
And he was part of his times. To the extent, I mentioned this to you before, you heard this, Clive Barnes, who was the big deal New York Times theater critic, said in the 70s that that Neil Simon was the Molière of our time, or which is a way of saying a mirror to our time.
Yeah.
And so that comedy was his way of holding up a mirror to us and seeing what our society was like. And I know the society has changed. There's something else about Neil Simon, I think I read somewhere he said he always started off trying to write something funny, but he always found himself turning into serious matters, whether it's about marriage, or
children, life and death,
or living in an apartment building when somebody is throwing their water out the window or something like
that,
or for that matter, toilets that you have to jiggle in order to make them. Flush correctly.
Yeah, I read in one of the comments today was that they said that he never really believed that anything he wrote was funny. He was always afraid that it wasn't going to land or be funny. And I thought that was very very interesting.
Well, we'll read a lot about him. He was he was incredibly successful. I mean, there is just no questioning that. And it was, I don't think it was any kind of lowbrow success either. I think some people thought of it that way.
It's true, they did.
I think he was an incredibly artful, talk about, you're all theater people, and much of the theater is the way in which you plot a show to make
Absolutely.
It work.
The Clive Barnes defense of, it's like a defense of Neil Simon by saying he was our contemporary Molière. Was in response to a popular perception that he was commercialistic. He represented commercial theater and not serious theater. And that distinction was very much alive in the world of the theater.
Sure.
Not just
people
who went to the theater.
Sure. You know, and Steven Spielberg is just nothing but it makes, popcorn movies.
Something.
I mean, it's just not true. I cannot thank you enough for spending this hour here. Peter Guarino, who is kind of the head artistic director of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, which is entering its 24th season. Wow. With six performances of Howard Ginsberg's play, Jefferson and Adams. Go to ShakespeareProjectChicago.com or .org to find out everything. Go to Newbery.org to reserve tickets. They don't cost anything, but to reserve seats to see these amazing actors.
Niles, Maine, you have to register.
Yeah. Niles and Elmhurst and Vernon. And
that's got to be on your website, yeah, though, right?
All of those.
Go to Gary's getting nervous now. These are three of the finest actors you will ever see in the city of Chicago or anywhere else. Gary Houston, Michael Mitchell, Aaron Sloan. It's been a real treat for me. That section you read of the play really, really moved me. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Anytime. I loved it. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago.